Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Climb up the mountaintop and start to blow, Gabriel. Blow England away. Shannon shines. Jason Holder does Jason Holder things. And isn't it good? Jermaine Blackwood. England weren't too bad. West Indies were too good. This is the Guerrilla Cricket Podcast.
Cricket. This is all about cricket. Guerrilla Cricket. Not just runs and wickets. So come and get it. Guerrilla Cricket Podcast.
But when the two saints go, the Dessalines come. Did you know Rally Round the West Indies was a primer on the Haitian Revolution? And fitting that we should recall the first people to dare to shout that Black Lives Matter, as two teams with that logo proudly on their shirts produced a fantastic return to Test cricket at the Aegeus Bio Bowl. I'm Knuckle M. Pandey. Welcome to the Guerrilla Cricket Podcast. Look back at the first England-West Indies Test and look ahead to the second. We're recording on Monday, the 13th of July, 2020, the day after West Indies' 4-wicket win put them 1-0 up in the series. Rallying with me, it's the co-host of the Caribbean Cricket Podcast and Guerrilla Cricket co-conspirator, Mashel St. Patrick Hewitt. Mashel, have you peeled yourself off the ceiling yet?
I finally put the rum down early this morning and returned to normal life, but I shall be ready to pick the rum up once more on Thursday, helping me get another humdinger in the second test, but... What a test match. I mean, cricket's been out for, 3 months, maybe longer, 4 months. And with the... Do you know what's brilliant? I wouldn't say the whole world was watching, but the whole world would have been watching cricket. People who don't normally watch cricket would have caught up with cricket over the course of the last 5 days. And it was brilliant that cricket served up a close test match. That I'm not saying it would have got new fans, but it certainly was a gripping test match.
Yeah, first in exactly 4 months, in fact. Not quite, actually. There was a little bit of some series that got aborted. But yeah, pretty much 4 months, certainly 4 months since Guerrilla Cricket had broadcast since that Women's World Cup final at the packed MCG with 86,000 spectators. And yeah, it was a reminder of why we've all been missing it so much, really. I mean, let's start with events in Southampton. We'll gust ahead to the second test, but let's start with events in Southampton. And start in particular with England. As ever when a team loses, much was made of England winning the toss and batting first and England leaving out Stuart Broad. But, you know, I've had a little bit of time to reflect today. And I wonder, Mash, are England really guilty of anything other than not playing as well as the West Indies?
Yeah, so I've been wondering about that. Because sometimes we're too quick, and this is sports fans as a whole, we're too quick to look at what went wrong with your side and trying to unpick it and pick out the minutiae of different elements here and there. But sometimes you're just outplayed. Now, do I think the West Indies outplayed England? Yes, I do. And England were hampered by Joe Root not being around. I don't think that should be underplayed. He's the best batsman in the side. Any team loses their best player, they are hampered by that. So I think that's valid. But what I finally came to today when I was trying to assess the wreckage of England's performance, the thing that I kept coming back to, Knackle, was did they pick a team they wanted to pick irrespective of opposition and the conditions? And I keep thinking that in the back of my mind, had they already decided on this team because they just wanted to try some permutations and see how things went, almost as if they were underestimating the West Indies. Is that too harsh?
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that England have underestimated and disrespected the West Indies. I mean, this is actually the first series in quite a while where someone in the England camp hasn't said something stupid about the West Indies before the start of the series. You think back to Colin Graves saying England were West Indies were mediocre back in 2015, and you go back to, you know, Geoffrey Boycott basically saying the West Indies shouldn't be allowed to play Test cricket after the day-night Test loss to Edgbaston in 2017. But no, this time everyone was pretty respectful going in. I mean, if there has been some talk that this was, I don't know, some of our guerrilla cricket contributors were putting around, you know, this was a team selected for Brisbane in the 2021-22 Ashes. You know, if that was the case, no one told Stuart Broad that this was the plan, evidently, judging by his interview mid-test match. He obviously was not expecting to be left out. He was not expecting that he would have to fight for his place and that his value to England should be questioned. So if there was a decision made, it wasn't communicated very well. And the communication that he got and the communication that thus we've all got is that it was that was a team pick for this pitch with Wood and Archer and Anderson. So England may have misread the pitch. That is a possibility. England may well have misread this pitch or underestimated the fact that the pitch probably wouldn't be able to sustain that level of pace because it's been so long since cricket has been played, because there's been no time to prepare it, because there isn't like a hard wicket block all the way along the sort of all the way along the middle section of the playing area to harden up the ball and rough up the ball and get reverse swing going. But, you know, Mark Wood is still a good bowler and didn't show it. He didn't show what he showed in the second and third test, or third and fourth test rather, in South Africa. He didn't show what he showed in St. Lucia, and conditions aside, you know, he was bowling both sides of the wicket and he was not hitting a consistent line and length, and he was bowling fast but predictably, I think. I said at the start of the series, and I wrote a piece for Guerrilla Cricket saying I would have picked Stuart Broad because I think that Anderson, Archer and Broad are England's best three seamers, and that's your best attack. And if the plan was to go into the series with your best attack, that's what you should pick. But I could see England being tempted by those three fast bowlers, two very fast bowlers in Wood and Archer playing together. And, you know, it is exciting. You know, it is something that that if it had worked would have been absolutely spectacular. And as we've seen in one day cricket when they played together. But I do think that was a little bit naive. But that said, you know, Mark Wood is someone who has bowled better than he showed in Old Trafford. And, you know, we go back to the next decision that was made in terms of winning the toss and batting first. I don't want to kind of preemptively shut down the discussion, but if England had scored 260, would anyone be talking about the toss?
I mean, I still think it would have been on the low side. If you bat first, you're not supposed to be making, irrespective of what happens in the rest of the match, you're not supposed to be making anything less than 300 if you've won a toss and chosen to bat. I think I said it on when we did our rum shot diaries over on Caribbean cricket after the test match. I said that you have an opponent where everybody in the world who's a cricket fan knows what their weakness is. They can't bat. Why would you choose to let that opponent do the one thing they're good at first? I personally don't understand it. So I wasn't, when I saw that England wanted to bat first, I wasn't disappointed. I was like, right, you're letting us have a crack. Brilliant. Because prior to the series, I'd always said the only way West Indies have a chance in this series is if we scuttle England out and it gives us an opportunity to take advantage of the fact that they, that because everyone thinks England can't bat either. And it just gives us an advantage to take, gives us an opportunity to take advantage of that. And England let us in and we took full, advantage of it, minus Joe Root.
Yeah, I don't think that's arguable. I think the West Indies made great use of the conditions that they had and took every advantage that they had at any at most points in the Test match, really, and maximised it completely. And that's, you know, that is ultimately how you win Test matches. It's not it's as much about what you do with the positions you find yourself in as sort of how you get there. But you know, there were periods in that England innings where they looked relatively comfortable. You know, when they were, you know, Dom Sibley got out, actually Burns and Denley looked quite comfortable for a little while. Zach Crawley was in for a little bit. Ben Stokes was in for a little bit, and we'll kind of talk a little bit about the role of Ben Stokes, the batter, not Ben Stokes, the captain, because I don't think you can really judge a captain after one Test match. And frankly, he's not going to captain England again for a while, so we don't need to talk about this quite yet. But that wasn't necessary until Jason Holder brought himself back on kind of partway through that innings. England were cruising.
Yeah, and I certainly look at... we're talking about the first innings, right? Not the second.
Talking about the first innings, yeah.
Yeah, first innings. When there was a point where Butler and Stokes, I thought, were comfortable.
Yep.
But then it was about three balls before Stokes got out. And I thought, why is he advancing down the wicket? Isn't this a bit needless? This isn't a one-day match. So, and yes, I think he's trying to throw the bowlers off. But to me, I felt there was a time and a place. And being 40-odd not out at the time, having been dropped twice, I'm not convinced that was reading the situation, the context of the Test match properly. So I just thought, I thought that was reckless. I thought that was self-inflicted and reckless, and it was needless. In the context of the match, why would you be doing that? I know he backs himself, but why would you be doing that?
I, not to play amateur psychologist, but I do wonder about the extent to which he backs himself. I sometimes want to think even Stokes doesn't realise still how good he is, that... You know, in both innings, you're right. He wanted to charge the fast bowlers, and Kemar Roach in particular, I guess, to cut down that angle that Roach creates around the wicket to the left-handers and cut down any movement. And he was doing it to Holder as well, who then exploited it brilliantly by getting the ball to just jag away and catching Stokes in the warp. But Stokes is a good enough player that he shouldn't need to do that. Stokes can bat normally, quote-unquote normally, and still score quickly because he's just that good. You know, in the absence of Joe Root, he was head and shoulders above every other England batter. Probably, you know, Jermaine Blackwood played heroically in the second innings, but even so, Stokes is head and shoulders above every other batter who was on display at Southampton. And only Root can challenge him, really, on that. So it may well have been some element of wanting to impose himself and wanting to be the hero, which you're not going to be able to take that out of Ben Stokes' game, and I'm not saying you should try, but it's a question of just a little bit of moderation. And I think that England have had an issue for a while where they don't quite moderate. And on the other side of that, you look at Dom Sibley, and you look at the caution and solidity is good at the top of the order. And it's exactly what Chris Silverwood wants. And it's how England are going to build this new Test team. But Sibley against the spinners in particular, against Roston Chase, who is fine and is not going to let anybody down, but he's not a demon. Dom Sibley, over the course of his career, has failed to score off 83% of the balls he's faced against spinners. He doesn't have any single options. He has done in counter cricket. He's found a way to score in the offside, but he just hasn't at Test level. We saw it against New Zealand with Mitchell Santner. We saw it against South Africa with Keshav Maharaj. We've seen it here with Roston Chase. And solid is good. Stuck is not good.
Yes. The spinners you've mentioned, Kiwi and South African, are significantly better in my mind than Roston Chase. And that's no disrespect to Roston Chase.
They're specialists.
He got two wickets, but you shouldn't... And I know we got 8 for 60 in Barbados, but come on. maybe Roston Chase should be keeping it tight, but he's not supposed to be taking out top order batsmen on a regular basis. That, so again, I thought, to me, that was an unnecessary giveaway as well, particularly given that Best wasn't really having the same impact, right-handers, left-handers notwithstanding, wasn't having the same impact on the West Indian batsmen. So I just think that there was a test match to be won there for England. And as we saw in the second innings when West Indies when we had our bat, we had the early collapse. And as I've kept saying pre-series, West Indies, you can expect them to have one batting collapse per test match, per innings, at least one innings in the test match. You can pretty much guarantee there's going to be some kind of collapse. So that even with their poor first innings, England could still have pulled off a victory. So you just have to now look back at some of those unnecessary mistakes. In the second innings, I think at one point England were 200 and something for three. 230-odd, maybe, for 320-odd?
There was a point when Stokes and Crawley were in just before Jason Holder brought himself and Alzari Joseph back on.
Yeah.
And I just came onto comms at that point, where it looked like England were going to take it away from the West Indies completely. Stokes was imperious. Crawley wasn't looking in any trouble at all. He was batting beautifully. Stokes was we've said about charging Kemar Roach. Stokes was charging Kemar Roach. He's a really good bowler. And slapping him through mid-on for four like he was a clubby. And he was batting brilliantly. But you're right. And, you know, absolutely take nothing away from the way the West Indies marshalled their attack at that point. Holder and Joseph came back into the attack bowl beautifully, tied everything down, made it that little bit harder for England, and then got the odd one to move. And then Shannon Gabriel, as soon as that breakthrough came on and bowled heroically, got an absolute beauty through Dom, past Dom Bess. Basically did Ollie Pope for just sheer weight of delivery. He just couldn't keep it out. And then it was a game on again. And then we had that fantastic day five. You aren't going to win many test matches when you score 200 batting first, whether you are put in or elected to bat.
Yeah. And that's why ultimately, no matter what kind of excuses or analysis anybody wants to give, ultimately, you still have to go back to the first in and say, well, you're pretty much putting yourself behind the eight ball any time you make that few runs. No matter the opposition, it could have been Ireland. And look at Lords. Okay, yes, they pulled it out of the bag against Ireland. But the point is, no, any competent cricket opposition, if you put yourself in that situation, 9 times out of 10 or maybe 8 times out of 10, you're not going to be able to pull it back.
Yeah, England have had two freakish performances where they've managed to pull that out again against Ireland and against Australia at Headingley. There's a reason those things don't happen very often.
Exactly.
And I think what was encouraging for the West Indies, and we're moving on now to the West Indies, what was encouraging about the West Indies was that unlike in at Headingley in 2017, this didn't take a freak performance for the West Indies to win this.
Yeah, 100%. And that's what I think for all the West Indians with fuzzy heads yesterday and this morning, what we've all been talking about is it was a mature, disciplined performance. This didn't, and like, even look at when people are talking about who's the man of the match, this wasn't a clear cut. Well, it's obviously the guy who got two centuries. It could have been Holder for his sixfer. It was rightly Shannon for his 9 wickets coming back from injury. Jermaine Blackwood hit a 95. Although he shouldn't be man of the match, Alzari Joseph's spell in the second innings when he came back and was in the groove for pretty much over after over. It was actually Joseph's spell that was the key in the second innings. So there were moments throughout the course of the test match for the West Indies where, and Jason spoke about it in the press conference I was in afterwards, where he said this was the most disciplined West Indian performance he's being captain for. And he's right. He's right. West Indies finally showed all the fans that if they can put it together consistently, they are a serious team to be reckoned with. And this is, bear in mind, this is without Darren Bravo and Shimron Hetmyer, who are obviously at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Jason Holder said that day four was his best day as a captain. You know, not his double hundred, not beating England or anything else that there might've been, but day four. And There is little more satisfying than, you know, to quote Hannibal from the A-Team, I love it when a plan comes together. And it was very obvious that not only was this a very disciplined performance. It was there had been a lot of planning and a lot of studying of England batters, studying of conditions, and working out how West Indies were going to play in order to win this Test match. And and they've used their time wisely. They've this preparation time that they've had. And I know you've spoken on your podcast about the role of Srikanth, the team analyst, and I know he's working from India at the moment, but you know, he has come on board and he's dovetailed really nicely with Holder and Simmons, and this team very much looks like a team that knows where it's going. I want to move on to the West Indies in terms of what we learned. You know, papers love to do X things we learn pieces after big matches. I mean, you've just said one of them actually. You know, that the West Indies can be disciplined and can be. That this West Indies rather can be disciplined and can outthink an opposition. I do think though that given that they won this game with the fast bowlers, all of whom apart from Kumar Roach bowled really well, and most of the runs came from the middle and lower order, is there anything else we've learned about the West Indies from this test that we didn't know already?
Yes. I think I'm trying to think, there's just something on the top tip of my tongue just there. Because you're saying the fast bowlers who we already knew about. You're right. And maybe I shouldn't touch on the fast bowlers. But they all complemented each other well. So it's not just that the fact that we knew they were a good unit. But actually, what I liked about them in this test match... Remember, Kumar Roach went wicketless. Mm-hmm. But his economy was spot on. He kept the pressure on. Jason spoke in the press conference about how he said to the bowlers on day one or day two, you're not all going to take wickets. But what you mustn't do is let one end be loose. Make sure you're tight at all times. Every single bowler was tight. And that, like I say, we know the bowling unit is good, but I saw something different personally in this test match. Everyone played their role. Shannon played the strike bowler to perfection. Kumar didn't take wickets, but kept it tight. Jason jagged it and moved it like we know he can. Joseph was probably undercooked in the first innings, but the advantage of when you have four fast bowlers is that fourth bowler, if you can keep him fresh and he plays his role perfectly as Joseph did in the second innings, it's like having another strike bowler. So as a unit, they were good. But also the other thing I think we learned, and maybe Nakul, this is about cricket as a whole. It's no coincidence to me that the West Indies have had 4 weeks of intense preparation prior to this test match taking place. We would never have got this in any other circumstance. Yes, it's a pandemic. This is unfortunate that this is the circumstance it's happened in. The ICC calendar never allows this because there's so much cricket going on. To me, it's no coincidence that with a four-week camp, we've hit the ground running and we've looked like we're a competitive test side. Imagine, Nakul, if all sides had that level of preparation prior to taking part in an away test series. I'm just wondering if that's something actually that needs to be picked up here.
Yes, for sure. And they've used that time very well, evidently, as you say, to plan and to work out exactly how they were going to go through the series and what they were going to do at all points and very much not get carried away as England perhaps did with their selection and not think, right, we've got some really fast, good fast bowlers. Let's try and blow England away like it's, you know, like it's a really fast bouncy pitch in Antigua, like they did. That, you know, that doesn't happen all that often. And England had a couple of absolutely wretched performances in the West Indies with the bat. That wasn't going to happen again. You know, England didn't bat terribly at very many points in this test match. I don't think you can think of maybe a few shots that weren't very good, but they weren't awful at any point. And the West Indies out-planned and out-thought England and stuck to their plans rigidly. And when someone wasn't, I think of, you know, Shannon Gabriel, actually in both innings with the new ball first up, didn't get very long spells because he wasn't quite there. But then Holder brought himself on early and just kind of calmed things down a little bit. Moving on to the batting, I mean, there's three people I want to talk about in terms of the batting. Jermaine Blackwood, he said before the start of the series that he was, you know, a new Jermaine Blackwood. You know, I looked at the stats and actually he scored all these runs in domestic cricket, but he scored them faster than he ever has. You know, is Jermaine Blackwood actually doing something new or is he doing the same thing but better?
From the people I've spoken to who know Jermaine well enough, what Jermaine has changed is he has reined in some of the shots. that he's Jermaine's got all the shots. All that's changed is for him to be a top run scorer in the 4-day competition back home is because he's basically realized you don't have to play shots all the time. Now, obviously, in the first innings, he comes out, he starts playing the shots. Everyone assumes, well, you know what? Obviously, this guy, he can't learn. He's just going to do what he wants. Second innings, he comes out and does and just repeats what he's been doing in domestic cricket. And I think what we've got to be careful of with Blackwood from a Caribbean perspective is we've just got to give him a run. You call a batsman back, give him a chance. So when I saw that inning, the first innings, and lots of people are like, you see, this is why Blackwood shouldn't play. I'm like, give him a chance. If a guy scores 768 runs across 8 games, give him a goal. Like, give him a long stretch to show that he's actually learned what he needs to now do at Test cricket. So with Jermaine, let's see how he is by the end of the series. But it was a gutsy knock, and I'll say no. I think I'll leave it there for now because I want to see what happens in Test 2 and Test 3.
Yeah, I think the innings kind of spoke for itself. You know, I think that's right. And I think it's a little bit of what I would like Ben Stokes to do is, you know, to recognise that actually you're good enough to absorb some pressure and be able to put it back on the bowlers later. And and just because you've blocked a couple doesn't mean you can't put away the next loose ball when it comes. And also, you talk about giving players a run. Two players who've had a long run, partly perhaps due to lack of options, but they've had a long run. You know, there's two questions I want to ask, really. Is Craig Brathwaite back, and was Shea Hope ever here?
Brathwaite, for me, is back, which is weird because I'm basing that off seeing the one innings of 68. But the reason I know Brathwaite's back, I actually thought his dismissal in the second innings was unlucky, by the way. I think it was Joffrey who got him. There was pace there, but it ricocheted into his stumps. I don't think that was a poor...
Openers are going to get good balls early on. It's going to happen sometimes.
So I'm not talking about that second innings, really. But the first innings, he was leaving the ball better. I also look at England's bowling to him, and I was like, what are they doing? Because what has got Brathwaite out over the last year and a half has been you bowl, good length, about a fourth and a fifth stump, he nicks off. That's what he's been doing. And England's bowling was wayward. It was as if they hadn't studied how he'd been getting out for the last year and a half. He got his eye in, and then he was just Brathwaite of old. I'm going to leave, I'm going to nudge, I'm going to nurdle, and I'm going to soak up the ball. Because that's what he's good at. At his best, he just takes loads of... He absorbs the new ball to make it easier. So Brathwaite, I've seen the signs at his back. Shai Hope, I'm... This...
The reason I asked, was he ever here? As has been remarked on a number of times, but some people still seem to forget, the famous two Test hundreds at Headingley, he hadn't scored any before, hasn't scored any since. He's averaging 20, less than 20 since the start of 2019. And looked really unsure about what he was trying to do in both innings.
So, I'm giving Shai Hope the rest of this series no matter what. I think the West Indies have persisted with him for this long that you might as well give him the whole series. I don't think they should drop him. And they've just got to trust, and he's got to realise this is it now. You've got four innings to save your immediate West Indies test career. If he does not produce, that's it for Shai Hope. That's it. He can't play again for at least a year. He's got to go play first-class cricket like everybody else. And in fairness, Knackle, he should have been sent to play first-class cricket a long time ago. But whatever, he hasn't. Probably because ODI cricket is on when the first-class season is on and whatever. But he needs to be told to go away and play cricket. Is he a bad player? No. But it is possible to be a very good player and for whatever reason, test cricket finds you out. I think of someone like Mark Rampakash. Classy on the eye. There can't be any England fan who didn't look at Rampakash and go, this guy is good. Did he produce? No. So some players, it just doesn't connect. And if he doesn't produce across his four innings, you have to ask, are we doing him a disservice by just leaving him out there to try and work it out? Something's not working for him. So take him out of the firing line at the end of the series.
And the West Indies obviously do have options because Darren Bravo and Shimmer and Hetmeyer will be back at some point.
Exactly. So they'll be the natural fit to replace him. And I feel sorry for him because he must know the pressure's on. But there is another option, actually. Quickly say this. If John Campbell isn't fit, they may tell Hulk to open. And I just wonder if that's what... I think that's what they'll do to him, but we'll see.
I was going to come on to that, actually. The West Indies selection a bit later. I was going to do England selection first, but that's a very good... Let's go to West Indies selection. I was thinking exactly the same thing, that if Campbell isn't fit, there are, the two obvious options in the reserves are Brathwaite's opening partner in Barbados, Shane Mosley, not the former multi-weight boxing champion, and Joshua De Silva, who opened the warm-up game and has been talked about a lot. Isn't a specialist opener in first-class cricket. Scored most of his runs at five, but obviously there's going to be a temptation. I do wonder, though, Campbell injured, Hope up to open, everyone else shuffles up one, Rakeem Cornwall comes in.
Yeah, so first things first, if Campbell's not injured, I think they'll pick the same team, and that means Rakeem's not going to play. I think Rakeem should play, but the inkling I get is that West Indies are in an unheard of position here. They have a chance to win a series in the second test match. I think you play the same side and try and blow England away again. I don't think you make the change unless the pitch at Old Trafford is so obviously going to take spin that you have to force Cornwall in no matter what. Now, if that is the case and Cornwall has to come in, I still think the only change they'd make is they'd drop Alzari Joseph and just put Cornwall in as a straight replacement. However, as you say, Nackle, there is another option. If Campbell is injured, you put Holt to open. And yes, you're right. I don't think they replace with a batsman. They move everyone up and tell Rakeem Cornwall, you're going to bat eight. Make sure you bat like you're a test cricketer, not like you're playing CPL. We shall see. Because the reserve players were carried specifically because if there is an injury, they play. But what I've been told and stories I'm getting coming out of the camp is if that's the case, Josh De Silva will get the goal because of his form in the warm-up games. But in theory, it should go to Shane Mosley because he is the actual opener. So there is potential decisions to make, but do not be surprised if it's the exact same team at Old Trafford.
One thing that might mitigate against that is Shannon Gabriel, whether he can go back-to-back test matches after so long away, and even whether he should, because he might... I think of the treatment of some other fast bowlers who've been rushed, who've rushed themselves back, and who, you know, there is a risk that you could break Shannon Gabriel. And obviously, we have no idea as to his fitness and how he's holding up. And let's hope that the West Indies medical department is sophisticated enough to have these kind of markers of when players have problems. Obviously, it would be from a I don't want to say talent because I don't really like that word, but from a sort of bowling capabilities point of view, Shannon Gabriel is a huge miss. But there has to be a little bit of concern there about not wanting to completely destroy Shannon Gabriel just after he's come back after 6 months off.
You're right.
Out, rather.
You're right. But I still keep thinking they're in a unique position. I'd almost say you have to play him. You just have to, even if he's not 100%. When else will West Indies get this opportunity to take out England in an away series? Take out anybody in an away series, never mind England. And they've got two cracks at it. I don't know. I feel like you have to go with your best team in the second test, irrespective.
Yeah, West Indies are in a position to go flat out to win the series and then rotate for the third test. Sort of similar to how they did in the West Indies last year, the slightly different circumstances, which is obviously a great position to be in, and that's the joy of winning the first test of a three-match series. And the West Indies are now off the on the scoreboard in the World Test Championship as well. Moving to England, I mean, the two obvious ones are Root in for Denley and Broad in for Wood. Is that too simple? Are we overthinking this? And while it seemed obvious on Sunday that it would be Crawley over Denley, Denley's role has been to be the human shock absorber, to just eat up deliveries and not worry too much about him scoring. You know, if it happens night, it's nice. Do you still stick with Denley to protect Root in the middle order, or do you trust someone in Zach Crawley who's got who obviously seems to have taken to test cricket very well?
So Broad for Wood is definite. I think that one's definite. We don't really need to discuss that one. Although I don't actually care. But I think there's a, isn't there another which we can get to after the Root point? What about Jack Leach for Best? But that's another case that possibly needs to be discussed. Dealing with Root, if it's a West, if I'm looking at it from a West Indian perspective and that was my team, I'd want the batsman who is most likely to protect Root. Now, whether people like Denley or not, he does soak up 70 balls all the time in making his 28, 29, 30 or 31 runs. Can you be certain that if you put Zach Crawley in front of Root, because what should be happening is Root should then go three, but it won't happen. So
England have tried that. It didn't work.
Yeah. So the next question then is, should they, well, whether they should or not, is it right to put Zach Crawley, granted off the back of a 70-odd, in front of Root? To protect, I don't know. It's a big question mark. If it's Denley, a lot of people are obviously going to be angry. But I see Denley's role as important. So it's just whether people think Zach Crawley can play that same role against the new ball.
Zach Crawley did bat three in South Africa and batted quite well. It's not something he's done very much in county cricket, but he has done it for England before and did quite well. And he's bettered his score with every innings, which is in Test cricket, which is a run that surely can't continue for too long. But and eventually he's going to get a good ball early or something, because that's just what happens. But there is, with Zach Crawley, caveat, he only averages 30-odd in first-class cricket and isn't particularly experienced. The sense that we got from that first Test match and from the South Africa series is that there's someone who can do what Denley can do and a bit more.
Do you believe that?
I think so. I think that a top three of Sibley, Burns and Crawley is something that England could go with for a little while and give it a run. Because I don't think none of those are going to throw their wickets away particularly easily. You know, Sibley got out leaving a ball. I mean, that's the very definition of not being very aggressive. And, you know, if anything with Storm Sibley, he needs to find a way to score a few more runs in the time that he eats up. Rory Burns, you know, looked all right in both innings. You know, I'm sure he'll be better at some point. He's got a lot of first-class experience. But at some point, the Denley experiment has to end. If this is his ceiling, at some point he's going to drop from it. And then what is he doing in the team? I think that the call that I would make is to say to Joe Denley, thank you, Joe. You've performed a task for us. You've stepped into the breach. You've been the human shock absorber. Go away and smash everyone all over the county championship for the rest of your career.
Which I think would be fair. I think that's fair enough. I think he's 34 years old. He's done his job. So I mean...
He's not going to get any better.
Yes, basically. And Zach Crawley's younger. As much as I'm West Indian, it is still against the West Indies. So you're not going to get much, granted a very good attack, but you're not going to get much better opportunities at home against...
I can think of a lot of attacks. Actually, there's a lot of good attacks around world cricket at the moment, so maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no one he could play against in a home series. Probably South Africa.
Maybe Bangladesh. Maybe Bangladesh.
Yeah, obviously, many like fast Bangladesh bowlers. Or Afghanistan or something. But this is as good as it's going to get for him to have a chance to see what he can do. So I'll go back to my other question to you. So Broadforward seems obvious. Crawley for Denley seems essentially obvious, but you wouldn't be surprised if for whatever reason Denley still played.
Put it this way, again, with having a bit more time to reflect, I can see the logic behind staying with Denley more than I could on Sunday.
So then the next question is, and which obviously there's been a lot of chat about, is that obviously West Indies have a team full of right-handers. I actually don't think Don Best bowled that badly. I'm not saying anybody said he did, but I don't think he bowled that badly. But Jack Leach, based on the fact that we're a team of right-handers, Jack Leach would be the better option, but then it weakens England's batting. What do you do there?
England cannot go in with an 8, 9, 10, 11 of Leach, Broad, Anderson and Archer, not in that order. Archer batted well for the first time in international cricket on Sunday and showed why he's got a first-class average of 26. But yeah, Archer at 8, Leach at 9, Broad at 10 and Anderson at 11, really? I mean, that's not going to happen. If you play Leach, you have to play the one of Curran or Wokes, and unless that was the plan to begin with, which fine, you know, Sam Curran and Chris Wokes are good bowlers, and I don't think we'll let anybody down particularly. But I think it throws off the balance of the team. And I think Bess did a job. And he batted quite well in the first innings. He batted well in both innings, actually, until they got that absolute beaut from Shannon Gabriel. And I thought he and Archer, I think, in both innings, bowled really well in tandem together. That ability Don Bess has to get a little bit of turn, a little bit of action, even on pitches that aren't turning that much, and also to bowl in a very controlled manner, dovetailed really well with Archer when he was bowling those and getting that bounce from back of a length. We saw in the first innings that Archer and Bess combined to get Shea Hope out. There was a point in the second innings where Archer and Bess bowled quite well together until Blackwood hit Bess out of the attack. I don't think Don Bess... If you thought that Don Bess was the best spinner going into the Test match, I've not seen anything which suggests that he's not now. Particularly as Moeen Ali isn't going to be picked for this series because he's playing the Ireland ODIs that start the day after this Test series. And incidentally, to forestall any questions, some of you may be yelling at your phone about someone we've only mentioned in passing. Jofra Archer's figures in this Test match were almost identical to James Anderson's. He's now taken 33 wickets at 28.12 and has as many fifers in 8 tests as Andrew Flintoff managed in 79, and one more, incidentally, than a certain Tino Best managed in 25. What more do you want? And that's the end of that one. So we're pretty much at the end of this and ready to wrap up. But we should get a little prediction from you, Mash. Firstly, what would you do? It's difficult. We haven't seen the pitch yet, but what would you do if you were Jason Holder and you won the toss, and give us a prediction, please.
So West Indies going to win the series now. We're going to wrap it up at Old Trafford. People won't believe I've just said that. We're going to wrap it up at Old Trafford.
You're going to wrap it up at Old Trafford this time or in the third test?
I never said when. We'll wrap it up at Old Trafford. But what would I do? I'd find a way for Rakeem Cornwall to play. I don't know how yet, but I would find a way. And I would... God, it's difficult, Knuckle. I don't want to put England back in unless the conditions are heavily in our favour. You answer it. I don't know. I actually don't know.
It might be a little bit... the forecast, as I saw yesterday, was that it's going to be a little bit cloudy on Thursday, but... In general, at Old Trafford, I'd want to bat first because it's a pretty dry pitch. Which
is what I'd be inclined to say, but I also don't want to face the England lineup. It's damned if you do, damned if you don't with the West Indies, because you know what you'll get with your bowling, but if the conditions aren't helpful, England get off to a flyer. Yeah. You know that the batting is so unpredictable that you could put yourself in, next thing you know, it's 60 for 5.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Jason, a lot was made of the fact that Jason Holder had said he wanted to bowl first. He wanted not to bat first. Let's be honest. That's what happened there. And for all of Jason Holder's other skills, he's pretty good at hiding those things. And he's a pretty canny operator after 6 years as a Test captain. I certainly think if you're playing Rakeem Cornwall, you bat first if you have the option to do so. I also would love to see Cornwall play. There is one other option, I suppose, you could leave out Roston Chase for Rakeem Cornwall, but it seems a little bit harsh given how much value Roston Chase has given to the West Indies over the last few years. Let's be honest, it probably would have been Blackwood had it not been for chopping block, had it not been for his 95, but obviously that's not happening either. So much to look forward to at Old Trafford, but that's all we've got time for in this show. Thank you, Mash Elson, Patrick Hewitt. He'll be back with us commentating for the rest of the series.
Thank you very much, Knuckle, and I look forward to catching up with you at the second test, Rally Around the West Indies.
Rally indeed. And listen to the Caribbean Cricket Podcast. It's ace. You guys have done amazing work pushing that show forward. And it's the power of speaking to your audience, which is what we try to do here on Guerrilla Cricket. Speaking of which, and audiences, remember, new for this series, we're partnered with Hot Mic, the only way to reliably sync up our live, interactive, never geo-block commentary with your TV. Download the app on iOS or Android, or go to hotmic.io on desktop and use the code GCRADIO at sign up. But we'll have another of these wrap-ups after the next test, but more pressingly, please join us from 10:50 a.m. UK time on Thursday on gorillacricket.com, facebook.com/cricktracker, facebook.com/gorillacricket, the Guerrilla Cricket YouTube channel, or indeed Hot Mic for the second test, every ball live from wherever we are in the world to wherever you are in the world. Stay safe, everybody. And remember, particularly those of you who are very online, just because you can make it into a cake doesn't mean you should. Bye-bye.
Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.